Welcome to Community News, covering the towns of Shrewsbury, Northborough, Westborough, and Southborough. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, we will be bringing you news from the Community Advocate, MySouthborough.com, and the Worcester Telegram and Gazette. This is John Riccio, reading today with Arnie Wenske, and we are coming to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. And now here's Arnie to begin our program with all you need to know from Shrewsbury.
Thanks, John, and good afternoon, everyone. Our first article, Art Dobson Honored on Military Appreciation Day. State Representative Hannah Kane proudly recognized Art Dobson of Shrewsbury as part of the second annual Military Appreciation Day. Although Dobson was not able to attend the ceremony at the Massachusetts State House, Kane visited him on Memorial Day to present him with a House citation, Governor's citation, and memorabilia from the ceremony. Hosted by the Executive Office of Veterans Services in collaboration with the Massachusetts Legislature, the event recognized the contributions of veterans, active duty service members, and military families from across Massachusetts. The ceremony featured remarks from Governor Maura Healey, Lieutenant Governor Kim Driscoll, Veterans Services Secretary Eric Guralnick, Veterans Services Deputy Secretary Andrea Gale Bennett, Senate President Karen Spilka, and keynote address by Brigadier General George Chris Hackler. The Healey-Driscoll administration created Military Appreciation Day in May 2025 to honor those who proudly serve both our country and communities. Each legislator was invited to nominate a member of their local military community to be honored during the ceremony. This year's 138 honorees were recognized and presented with an official governor's citation and a challenge coin in appreciation for their service. Art Dobson joined the Marine Corps after graduating high school, serving for 3 years until he was discharged in 1954. Following his service, he moved to Shrewsbury and began working at Iandoli Supermarket, later becoming a manufacturer's representative, helping food producers sell their products in local stores. Art has also been a member of Shrewsbury's Rotary Club for over 40 years and helped establish a Rotary Club in Kyiv, Ukraine in 1992. I'm proud to recognize Art Dobson for his military service and his many contributions to Shrewsbury, said Kane. His volunteer activities have had a positive impact in the community and reflect the strength, resilience, and dedication of our local military community. I'm honored to celebrate his service. It was a privilege to stand before those who have given so much, including members of the Gold Star Wives and Families, said Guralnick. As we reflect on the service of our honorees today, we are reminded of our shared responsibility to stand by them, ensuring they have the resources, respect, and opportunities they deserve, not just today, but every day. On Military Appreciation Day, we honor the courage and sacrifice of the brave men and women who have served our nation in uniform, said Senate President Karen Spilka. As the daughter of a veteran, I know the deep sense of duty and service that military families carry with them every day. We are also reminded of our solemn responsibility to care for veterans who have sacrificed so much for our country and to ensure they receive the support and respect they have earned. On behalf of the grateful Senate, thank you to every active member of the military, every veteran, and every family member who has given their life to service. Our next article, Selco to hold open house. Selco is inviting the community to its annual community open house on June 25th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Selco service area located at 30 Municipal Drive in Shrewsbury. The free, family-friendly event gives residents the opportunity to learn more about the community-owned utility while enjoying hands-on activities, demonstrations, and entertainment for all ages. One of the featured attractions will be guided tours of the Johnson Substation, where attendees can learn how electricity is safely and reliably delivered throughout the community. Guests will also have the opportunity to explore Selco vehicles during the Touch a Truck experience, while children can gear up with complimentary safety hats and vests. Visitors interested in electric vehicles can participate in Tesla drives and experience EV technology firsthand. Guests can also meet and interact with the sheep that help maintain vegetation at Selco's solar farm, including opportunities to pet and feed them. The event will include free popcorn, bounce houses, inflatable games, and additional activities for children and families. Community members can also visit informational booth to learn more about fiber internet, Selco Stream, smart meters, energy efficiency rebates, and programs available through the utility. Selco staff will be on hand to answer questions and discuss the benefits of the community-owned public power in Shrewsbury. Attendees can cool off with ice cream from local favorite Ullman's Ice Cream, and families will have the chance to meet tracks from the Worcester Railers during a special appearance at noon. Parking will be available at Walter J. Patton Elementary School with signs directing guests to the Selco service area. Our next article, Shrewsbury Hooters to close. Shrewsbury's Hooters is set to close. The restaurant announced its impending closure in May 27th social media post that thanked guests, encouraged diners to visit their Hooters locations, and included a dozen photos of its team members. After much consideration, we've made the difficult decision to close our Shrewsbury location, the restaurant wrote. These decisions are never easy, and we want to sincerely thank the Shrewsbury community for years of support, memories, and loyalty. To all of our wonderful guests, incredible team members, and amazing Hooters girls, thank you for being what made this location special. No exact closing date was announced. Our next article, overhead lights coming to Maple Avenue softball lacrosse fields. These Shrewsbury fields will no longer sit in darkness. During town meeting on May 18th, Shrewsbury's elected representative voted 149-22 to expend $650,000 in Community Preservation Committee funds to provide overhead lighting at the softball and multipurpose fields located at 176 Maple Avenue. This addition will significantly expand access to public recreation facilities by extending usable field hours beyond daylight, especially during peak demand periods, Kathleen McSweeney told town meeting while introducing the article. Though the final vote was lopsided, the project was met with some concern. I've given the matter a lot of thought, and I have to oppose it, said Lisa Steele, primarily for light pollution issues. When we've had a potential aurora, I've seen people going into those fields looking for a dark sky. When we've had comets, too, I see people strategizing. I'm deeply concerned about losing that. This is $650,000 in taxpayer money just to put it in, and we're going to have to pay for their use every year, said Finance Committee member David Remington. That's ongoing costs. We never receive data about how they'll be used. Why don't we see how we can put this off a year? After debate, the lights were ultimately approved. This is a large fee, and it's quite a larger number, so I understand the sticker shock. It's a one-time fee in the sense that the light system would be under warranty for 25 full years. The lifespan is estimated at 50 years. So this is a very long-term investment, said Recreation Director Laurel Rossiter, who applied for the funds. Added John Schenier, for me as a coach and parent, it's really difficult to see our athletes only be able to utilize half of the fields. As the sun sets, it makes it impossible for our lacrosse players to safely see the ball. Lacrosse is a high-speed contact sport. These are critical infrastructure investments that pay off over time. Our next article, Shrewsbury Police Department officers jump into Lake Quinsigamon to help man in distress. At approximately 9:55 a.m., on May 27th, a 19-year-old male fled from an ambulance at UMass Memorial Medical Center on Lake Avenue in Worcester. Shortly after fleeing, the man entered the waters of Lake Quinsigamon, just north of Regatta Point State Park on the Worcester side of the lake. Immediately upon being notified of a person in the water, multiple Shrewsbury police officers launched the Shrewsbury Police Department boat to assist the Worcester Police Department and UMass Police Department. The Shrewsbury Police Department jet ski was also launched. For approximately 2 hours, the individual refused to exit the water or comply with police. The Worcester Police Department crisis intervention team also attempted unsuccessfully to persuade the male to exit the water. At approximately 12:10 p.m., Lieutenant Kevin Caviston and Detective Chad Chisna, who had deployed the Shrewsbury Police Department jet ski, made the decision to jump into the water to physically escort the male to safety. The male was brought to shore, handcuffed, and then loaded onto the Shrewsbury Department boat. He was transported to the docks at Regatta Point, where he was transferred to an ambulance. Several Shrewsbury officers on land responded, as well as the Shrewsbury Police Department drone unit and the Massachusetts Environmental Police. The department thanks all of its partners from this multi-agency effort for working together for a safe outcome. Our next article, man arrested in Shrewsbury for illegally selling large-capacity firearms. On May 18th, the Milford Police Department, the Massachusetts State Police Violent Fugitive Apprehension Section, and ATF Worcester concluded a long-term investigation into the illegal sale of firearms in Milford. At approximately 8:50 a.m., Massachusetts State Police and the Shrewsbury Police Department apprehended Robson D'Souza, age 20, of Milford. D'Souza was transported to Worcester Superior Court and faces several charges, including selling large-capacity firearms, possessing large-capacity firearms, carrying a firearm without a license, conspiracy, and possessing ammunition without a federal ID card. Once again, a great collaborative effort with multiple agencies to get illegal firearms out of our community, said Milford Chief of Police Robert Tosino. Following is an announcement from the Shrewsbury Senior Center. Poetry reading and discussion, Crimson Courageous. Join local author Christine Ormady Ingola for a reading and discussion of her book, Crimson Courage. That'll be on Monday, June 22nd, 2 p.m., Shrewsbury Senior Center. Crimson Courageous offers a powerful and unique look at modern life, work, and rural America. Though through compelling and creative storytelling, the book speaks to readers from many walks of life, those of faith, individuals navigating today's economic challenges, and anyone interested in exploring cultures such as Uganda from a deeper perspective. And with that, I'll turn it back over to John.
Thank you, Arnie. Now, after the next public service announcement, I'll be back to continue the program with all the news from Westboro.
Here on Audio Journal, we read many local community newspapers each week, including the Gardner News. You can hear the Gardner News every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Stay in touch with your community by tuning in to Audio Journal. The Gardner News, every Wednesday at 6 p.m.
And now we're back to tune into the Westboro news and events. Westboro Fire Chief to retire. After 27 years with the Westboro Fire Department, Chief Patrick Purcell will retire on August 9. As the Select Board begins to determine its next steps for hiring his replacement, Purcell is urging the Board to conduct an internal search. Purcell has served as the town's chief since 2015. He has also served as the president of the Fire Chiefs Association of Massachusetts since May 2025. Under his leadership, the department established a joint public safety dispatch with the Westboro Police Department, utilized the town's Code Red system, updated plans relating to emergency management, and worked during the peak of the COVID-19 pandemic. Purcell also highlighted earning $20 million in grant funding. Staffing was increased from 8 to 11 firefighters per shift. In the 11 years Purcell served as chief, there has only been one grievance filed in the department, one, he said, he completely understands, which resulted in a positive outcome. It was all team effort, he told the board. I have exemplary employees, and without them we wouldn't have been able to achieve some of the successes. He explained that his staff members have obtained a number of degrees and certifications, and there are a number of candidates who are very well credentialed to step forward into the chief position. Having been a part of quite a few hiring committees, Purcell recalled that during the last police chief hiring process, the department was said to have depth for decades. The fire department is no different, he said. I think you see that in the service we deliver to Westboro. I can't think of one reason to go outside, he said, noting that at least three staff members are interested, but plenty more are qualified. The Select Board will decide whether to pursue an internal or external search, and three candidates may be selected as finalists. The search can be conducted through an appointed search committee, or the board could do it itself. While the whole board appeared to be in favor of establishing an appointed committee, Select Board member Patrick Welch was the only one on the board to disagree with performing an internal search. I will not support anything other than an external search. I think it does a disservice to the community. It's no different than saying we are only going to hire within the bounds of Westboro. We need to get the best candidates, he said, also adding that he agrees with Purcell that there are excellent internal candidates. Select Board Chair Sean Keough said the department is running well. If there were problems, he would possibly consider an external search. But right now, he doesn't sense any. I don't see issues. I don't see them at all, he said. Select Board to decide next steps for Community Center. With the Westboro Public Library to return to its West Main Street location in the fall, thereby vacating its current temporary spot in the Community Center building, the Select Board is beginning to discuss next steps for the Community Center. When efforts were paused in December of 2024, the thinking at the time was to complete the work in two phases, constructing the Senior Center portion of the first floor, then completing that remainder of the first floor space, namely the auditorium and veterans areas, and portions of the second floor. At this time, the design for Phase 1 is 80% complete, while Phase 2 is at 50% completion. To get to this point, the town has spent $40,000 in American Rescue Plan Act funds, $85,000 from free cash, and $1.1 million from the Del Webb Chauncey Lake Stabilization Fund. The Select Board must now decide whether to continue with the pre-established construction phases or reconsider the scope of Phase 1. The board said it will make this decision at its next meeting. Phase 1 had previously been estimated at about $10.5 million for construction, while Phase 2 was estimated at about $14.5 million. Costs could shift if the components of each phase are changed. Several Select Board members seemed intent on focusing on the Senior Center. "I don't want to lose a vote to redo the Senior Center," said Select Board member Ian Johnson. "We owe it to the seniors. We've talked about it for a long time. We need to do something sooner than later." Select Board member Mark Silverberg said he is a firm supporter of Phase 1, noting that you can't sell the existing Senior Center until we get the new Senior Center open. "The hope is to put the project out to bid by early 2027 to ensure bids are in hand for the March town meeting. Public engagement sessions will be happening soon, and the Select Board will be listening to hear what residents think about the community center's next steps." Former BJ's headquarters site hits the market again. A Westboro site that was once expected to become an expansive life science campus may be sold. Economic Development Coordinator Lara Crawford announced that lots at 25 and 29 Research Drive have hit the market again. The properties were purchased separately in 2023 by Alexandria Real Estate Equities Incorporated, an affiliate of a California investment firm, for a total of $45.25 million. In August 2022, the town approved plans to transform the 68 acres of land, formerly home to BJ's Wholesale Club headquarters at 25 Research Drive, and Triborough Crane and Rigging Services at 29 Research Drive. The applicant sought to demolish all the current structures on the site. Then it wanted to construct four buildings, totaling 715,000 square feet, buildings that would form an innovation campus, including life science, laboratory, office, research and development, and warehouse uses. However, since the applicant won approval, the lots have remained unchanged. "It's been quite a while. It's been sitting," Crawford told the Economic Development Committee on May 5th. "I'm happy it's on the market because at least there'll be something happening." Fred Leonardo, Community Development Director, said he believed it was an issue with timing, especially since the applicant had approached the town at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. Life sciences kind of took a dive during that time frame, So for those buildings, the marketing was kind of just way off, he said. Leonardo also noted that there is no sundown clause on the site plan. The applicant could move forward with the project if it desired to. Approximately 100,000 to 200,000 gallons per day of wastewater flow had been estimated for the project, according to permit documents. The sewer capacity has been on hold since the project's approval. The lots are situated in the General Industrial Zone and Industrial Overlay District, meaning that while residential uses are not permitted by right, most other commercial and industrial uses are. Crawford said she and Planning Director Jenny Gingras are continuing discussions with the few developers regarding the property. How Patrice Paris Found Her Voice. On the second floor of a Westboro plaza on Main Street, the vibrancy of Patrice Paris Voice Studios is likely to catch your eye. Midnight blue couches, bright yellow pillows, framed photos of stars like Ed Sheeran and Taylor Swift, and the light-up Dream sign that invites singers of all ages into the space. However, nothing in the studio is as vibrant as Patrice Paris herself. In her black jumpsuit, combat boots, and bright turquoise earrings, Paris radiates energy as she works in her studio, a business she has owned for 12 years. The Shrewsbury native has a storied singing career marked by national anthem performances at every major New England stadium. Her work was featured on Netflix's Temptation Island and on The Voice. It took her a long time to get to this point. Paris fell in love with music and theater in high school, but she was only cast in her first lead role during her senior year. Before landing the role of Robin in Godspell, Paris was unsure if the world of music and theater was the route she wanted to take with her life. She wondered, "Am I good enough to even pursue this?" After high school, Paris went on to study classical music at Anna Maria College before moving to UMass Amherst to study theater. College offered her training and opportunity, but Paris still questioned whether she'd be able to sustain herself in this field. After working at a now-defunct theater and going on a couple of auditions, she found herself helping an artist development program in Boston. Paris was asked to work as a vocal coach. At first, she declined the offer, worried it would take away from her own artistry. But after some thought, she took the role. I think a lot of people think when you teach or you coach, you're going to lose so much. But I learned so much, she said. Her coaching developed at that first studio, and since then, Paris has opened her own coaching business, become a mother, started writing music, and battled cancer. While she was sick and losing her hair, Paris thought about her industry's standards of hair, makeup, and fashion. But nothing could faze her. "I'm just going to rock this," she said. "It's okay. I'm me." She added, "I think anything that gives you a hardship, you can take that on with the mindset of treating it like a lesson." She tells her students, whom she fondly refers to as her artists, that once she realized not everyone was going to love her music and her voice, a weight lifted off her shoulders. She felt she could stay authentic to herself and her voice without catering to what others wanted from her. Her artists don't have to be perfect. Paris encourages them to own their mistakes and constantly reminds them that getting better is a process. "That's how I try to get them to break out of their shells. I use what I've learned in the past for myself and educate them in all the different realms. The voice and the performance and even the business stuff," she said. "Authenticity comes from the process of just living life and being okay with you, Paris said. I try really hard. I can get super excited and passionate, and I try to keep in mind what I've learned along the way with myself and learning, which is that things happen on a gradient. That ends our segment on Westboro. After the next public service announcement, Arnie will be back with all you need to know about Southboro.
What's your vision?
My vision is 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye, zero vision in the left eye.
No, what's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, we believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.
We're back, and as promised, here's Arnie with all you need to know about Southboro.
Thanks again, John. Our first article, approved 32-unit 40B could be bring Southboro to safe harbor. After 2 years of deliberation, public feedback, and multiple plan revisions, the Zoning Board of Appeals approved the permit that will allow for the construction of 32 townhouse units on the corner of Route 9 and Parkerville Road. Of the proposed units, 25% or 8 will be designated as affordable, renting only to individuals or families whose total household income does not exceed 80% of the area median income. According to the Department of Housing and Urban Development, the current median family income for the area is about $149,400. The 5.5-acre site is located in the town's Residence A district, which does not allow multifamily house by right. However, the project's 40B status helps allow housing in locations where local zoning would otherwise prohibit or restrict it. As of December 2024, 9.94% of the town's total housing stock was designated as subsidized housing inventory, or SHI. With this project, could potentially reach 10% SHI, or safe harbor status, which would stop 40B projects from bypassing local zoning. The applicant, Ferris Development Corporation Group, will still need final approval from Mass Housing before moving forward with the project. To go along with the units, 36 garage parking spaces, 36 driveway parking spaces, and 11 surface parking spaces are proposed for the site. There will be one access point to the site via Route 9. Units will be serviced by municipal water and private septic systems. The permit will expire if construction is not started within 3 years of the filing date. However, the documents state that the applicant must make its best effort to secure a building permit within 1 year of the decision filing. Our next article from the Community Advocate for Southboro. Southboro Fire Captain reflects on a life of serving community. Around 2003, Southboro Fire Department Captain Christian Deneau was enjoying a day off at Old Silver Beach in Falmouth when tragedy struck. As the tide came in, two young boys were pulled out into the water, frantically gasping grasping a buoy in an effort to stay afloat. The 8-year-old boy was desperately trying to hold his 5-year-old brother up out of the water. Somebody got to do something, Dano recalls hearing as he looked up from his magazine and noticed a crowd of about 50 people standing by the water. Without even thinking, he jumped in, putting the younger boy on his back and the older boy under his arm. Dano pulled himself and the kids through the water until they all safely returned to the rocks. He still looks back on this day as one of his proudest moments over his 35 years as a firefighter, and he often thinks about those kids who are now in their 30s and the countless others he has been able to help throughout his career. For Dano, life is about service. Inspired by his grandfather, a lifer in the U.S. Army who served during World War II and the Korean War, and his father, Dano enlisted in the U.S. Army at just 17 years old. "I grew up with that sense of patriotism," he told the Community Advocate. "I wanted it so bad. I could taste it." Through the split option program, Dano completed his basic training after his junior year of high school. He returned to finish out his senior year before going off to job training. Like many, Dano started to second-guess his decision once he encountered drill instructors. But as soon as he found his place and got comfortable, it was very rewarding, he said. He trained in the infantry with hopes of becoming a police officer and served in the Army Reserves from 1990 to 1995. However, after 3 weeks in his criminal justice course at Quinsigamond Community College, Dano realized the police force wasn't for him. He joined his hometown fire department in Auburn as a call firefighter in 1991. "It took one ride in a fire truck, and I knew that's what I wanted to do. That was my calling." By 1996, Dano was a full-time firefighter, serving as the town's first ever paramedic. He joined the Southboro Fire Department in 2002 and was promoted to lieutenant in 2004. "Being able to help people is so rewarding," he said. Serving in the U.S. Army taught Dano to appreciate every warm meal, hot shower, and good night's sleep, needs that he feels people often take for granted in America. In his office at the station, a box sits atop a filing cabinet. Inside, he keeps his grandfather's flag, three bronze stars, and a silver star. Just beside the box, the case for his father's Purple Heart. "It's a calling, really, to serve your community," Dano said. "If I could talk to 8-year-old me and tell him who I became, I think he'd be very proud. I love coming to work." Our next article comes from mysouthboro.com. Algonquin Regional High School graduating senior raising money for a return service to Guatemala. A Southboro teen and soon-to-be Algonquin graduate is actively fundraising for another service trip to rural Guatemala this summer. Last year, Sophia Keene received community support for a mission trip organized by School the World to help build a school for children living in rural extreme poverty. The program, run by School for the World, explains. Each student group funds 50% of the school and or playground and supports the majority of our in-country programming. That means significant funding for our teacher training, parent programs, and distribution of learning materials. The other 50% are for the cost of travel, accommodations, etc. I'm told that last summer, Keen spent her week pouring cement, painting, and interacting with the Guatemalan students of the school. Her fundraising page enthuses about the experience and why she's looking to return this summer. "Last summer, I found School the World by chance, and it completely changed my life. The week I spent making a difference in the lives of locals was so rewarding that I immediately knew I had to do it again. This summer, I plan to go back to Guatemala and make a life-lasting memory to better educate myself about the culture, values, and hardships of the resounding community." Education is incredibly important, and by building schools in underprivileged areas, we take one step closer to a better tomorrow. Whether it was playing jump rope with the kids, learning a new language, or seeing the truly grateful looks on residents' faces after the school was revealed, the experiences I had can never be replaced, and that's why I'm asking you to help me make the change. By donating to my page, you can take one step closer to make a difference. Thank you to everyone who donates. Your support means the world. Keene's fundraiser is part of the Service Trips $100,000 fundraiser. The goal for her share is $3,950. As of this morning, she has one-third of the way there. Our next article from myselfborough.com, Annual Forum on Community Preservation Act, June 11th. Most years, voters at annual town meeting decide whether or not to support new projects using money collected through the Community Preservation Act surcharge, known as CPA. If you're thinking about bringing a proposal forward or want to ask questions, provide feedback before the next funding cycle opens, mark your calendars. The Community Preservation Committee, CPC, is holding its annual public forum a week from tomorrow. The forum is an opportunity for interested community members to learn more about what the CPA fund can cover and the application process. It's also a chance for the public to ask questions and voice opinions, propose ideas on what kinds of projects they would like to see funded and prioritized. You can even propose ideas for specific projects. At the public forum on Thursday, June 11th, CPC members will explain the timeline and process for applying for CPA funds for the next funding cycle. They will also answer questions from participants, including those who joined by Zoom rather than attending in person. Although town meeting 2027 may seem a long way off, the process of vetting proposals and preparing articles can take a long time. Applications are typically solicited beginning the summer prior. The meeting starts 7 p.m. at the townhouse hearing room with option to attend virtually. An invite from CPC chair explains that the forum provides an opportunity to, first, inform the community about the role of the Community Preservation Act in Southborough. Next, showcase projects that have been funded through CPA resources. Next, explain types of projects that are eligible for CPA funding. Fourth, review the Community Preservation Committee's application process. Fifth, and finally, encourage all CPA stakeholders, including town departments, boards, commissions, committees, community groups, private organizations, and residents, to share and discuss ideas for future CBA-funded projects. Our next article comes from the Metro West Daily News, dated June 7th. Framingham, Mass. Resident found dead in Crystal Pond in Southborough. A Framingham resident was found dead on Sunday evening, June 7th, of an apparent drowning in Crystal Pond in Southborough. In a press release, Southborough police said the victim was 43 years old, Framingham resident. Police did not release the victim's name or gender. Police said a bystander called 911 at 4:25 p.m. Sunday from Crystal Pond Road. The caller reported seeing a kayak flip over and its occupant go under water. The Southborough Police and Fire Departments, as well as the dive teams from the Massachusetts State Police and Fire District 14, searched the pond while the State Police helicopter and the Westboro Police Department drone unit assisted. Emergency workers found the victim at 7:24 p.m. Police did not immediately release any more information on Sunday night. And with that, I'm going to turn it back to John for more news.
And after the next public service announcement, that's exactly what I'll have, the news from Northborough.
What's going on in your town is important to you. Meetings that decide your taxes, changes in laws in your community, plans for new housing and businesses, and news about schools are all vital for you to know. Here on Audio Journal, we read many local community newspapers each week. In addition to the news of your community and area, you'll also hear about special events, stories about your neighbors, their businesses, their activities, and more. Stay in touch with your community on Audio Journal, broadcasting to print-impaired residents of central Massachusetts.
And now we'll finish up with the news from Northborough. The worst road in Northborough granted $500,000 for improvement. Assabet Hill Circle is not for the faint of heart. Dips and valleys in the street, sinkholes, potholes. Check your tires after driving on it. During the second night of town meeting on April 28th, residents overwhelmingly, 146-10, voted to appropriate $500,000 in free cash to complete the first phase of bidding and construction services to fix the roadway. Last year, town meeting granted approximately $100,000 in preliminary funding to get the work started. This will fund the first phase of repairs to the drainage in the Assabet Hill neighborhood, said Northborough DPW Director Scott Charpentier. The drainage was built relatively poorly. The result has been sinkholes in the roadways, undulations of the sidewalk, and failed curbing. He added, "The sidewalks and the pavement conditions are poor." Work will begin this year and start downhill. Charpentier said he wasn't sure how many repairs the $500,000 would allow for, but that he'd likely be back next year to ask for more funds to complete the project in its entirety. The project has been on the town's radar since 2019. According to figures provided by a resident, the neighborhood has 38 homes and close to 40 school-aged children. 80% of those children are elementary-aged or younger. This has been on the docket for quite some time, so I'm really excited for it to be here and voted on. It's been a long time coming. The development was built in the 1990s, and it wasn't built with ideal standards, said Assabet Hill resident Danielle Williams. Now we have a Town of Northborough public hearing notice from the Northborough Planning Board. In accordance with Mass General Laws, the Northborough Planning Board will hold public hearings on June 9th at 6 p.m. for the following purposes. 1. To seek public opinion on a scenic road application submitted by Corvo Development LLC for 17 Green Street in the residential B-Zone district. The applicant seeks approval to remove approximately 80 linear feet of stone wall within the limits of the Green Street right-of-way to construct a cul-de-sac to serve 3 family homes. And 2, to seek public opinion on an application for a special permit for a non-residential accessory use, a groundwater special permit, and a special permit with site plan approval submitted by St. Gobain Research North America for the construction of a temporary gravel parking lot and laydown area of approximately 39,200 square feet at 10 Goddard Road in the Industrial District and Groundwater Protection Overlay District Area 2. These applications are on file in the planning office and can be viewed online. This meeting will be conducted via remote participation. To participate in the public comment portion of the public hearing, please call the planning board for details. And it's signed Amy Poretsky, chairperson. A grieving mother organizes tournament in memory of son. Anne Marie Rogers and Suzanne Cox had their Friday routine figured out. At the end of every week, they'd head to the courts near Chauncey Lake to play pickleball with friends and family. Afterwards, they'd head to the Red Heat Tavern for dinner. It became a thing, said Rogers. But in 2022, the group's Friday pickleball plans changed forever. Rogers' son Jacob, a member of the crew that frequented Red Heat Tavern, died by suicide. He was 20 years old at the time. Faced with the unimaginable, Rogers leaped into action. I just had to do something. Had to keep my mind busy, she said. I wanted to do something for him. I couldn't do something for him right now, but I could do something because of him. I couldn't sit there and do nothing. Later in 2022, Rogers created the Jacob Rogers Memorial Pickleball Tournament. On May 9, 2026, the fourth annual event brought together hundreds at Route 12 Pickle in West Boylston, raising thousands of dollars for the Shine Initiative, a Worcester-based nonprofit organization that educates children and young adults about mental health issues. Cox, a pickleball instructor who was by Rogers' side throughout the tragedy, became the tournament director, organizing a day of play that brought together pickleball players of all ages and abilities. Rogers and Cox were strangers before their pickleball days, but they saw each other enough at the Chauncey Lake courts that a friendship formed. The tournament was an opportunity to honor Jacob Rogers while, like Rogers and Cox did, forging new pickleball connections with Central Mass locals. As an instructor for however many years, pickleball is the most unifying sport, Cox told the community advocate. There's something about this game where, maybe it's the distance on the court, you just make friends. It leads to a social experience. It's the most social sport there is. What other sport do you see that? People playing together and staying together. For Rogers, seeing the outpouring of support was inspiring. But for others, Rogers' ability to create something good in the face of tragedy was the most motivating part of the tournament. She's amazing. Instead of crawling into a hole and never being seen for years, like 99% of mothers would do, she right away turned it around, trying to make sure this wouldn't happen to any other family, said Cox. It's amazing how she turned that energy and grief into action. Medals were distributed at the tournament, balls were dinked, and players stepped into the kitchen. But what was most important that afternoon was remembering Jacob Rogers, creating new pickleball partnerships, and helping the Shine Initiative educate people about mental health. Through the many charitable donations, pickleball likely saved a life. Shine is trying to talk about how to reform the mindset of young adults. It's okay if, in the future, your mind isn't working like your knee doesn't work. It's okay to go see someone if you're not feeling okay, said Cox. Northborough's Greg Crippen signs with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Greg Crippen grew up dreaming of becoming an NFL player. This spring, that dream came true. After a childhood of telling classmates he wanted to play football professionally, Crippen, a Northborough native, officially signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He'll be competing for a roster spot in the upcoming weeks and months. It was an unbelievable feeling to sign. A sign of all the hard work, said Crippen. Crippen started his career at Milton Academy, later transferring to IMG Academy, a sports-focused school in Bradenton, Florida, known for producing elite athletes. At IMG, he became a four-star recruit and did not allow a sack during his junior or senior year. Then came his time at Michigan, which he calls the best university in the world. Though he was limited in his first 3 years in Ann Arbor, he won the college football playoff national championship in 2023 and took a leading role for the Wolverines in 2024 and 2025. Crippen appeared in 40 games at center with 21 career starts. I felt like I kept getting better, said Crippen. I had an unbelievable experience at Michigan. Crippen, the son of Tom and Sue Crippen, says his success is a product of hard work. To do great things, you have to sacrifice. I feel I've done the sacrifice, going to IMG Academy at 16 years old, living in Florida and being away from family and friends. I'm working super hard every day. You get 1% better every day. If you're not working your hardest every day, you're falling behind. I never want someone to outwork me. And after not hearing his name called on draft day, he is vying for a roster spot with an extra chip on his shoulder. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of the program schedule, call 508-797-1117. We'll be here next week and hope you will be too.
This is Bird Note. And this is a sagebrush sparrow singing from atop a big sagebrush. As their name suggests, sagebrush sparrows live in dry, open shrublands. They winter in the desert southwest and migrate as far north as central Washington to breed each spring. About the size of a junco, sagebrush sparrows are dressed in soft grays and browns. You'll often spot these dapper birds singing from a high perch, making it easy to view the distinctive patch of dark feathers at the center of their otherwise white breast. Performance complete, the little bird hops back to the ground to forage for seeds and bugs with his flock. Look for them running rapidly about, with tails cocked up like scampering chipmunks. The sparrow's plaintive song seems to convey a sense of their precarious future in the West. Sagebrush sparrow populations have declined by more than 50% since 1970, largely due to habitat loss from urbanization, agricultural conversion, and wildfires. To support our remaining sagebrush sparrows, we have to protect the landscapes they call home. Learn more about sagebrush conservation at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
What's your vision?
My vision's 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye and zero vision in the left eye.
20/200 at best on my left eye, and on my right eye, I cannot see.
No, I mean, what's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
My vision is employment opportunities for all, including people with disabilities.
My vision is for all of my students to dream big.
That he become fully independent.
For my patients to live their best lives.
What's your vision?
What's your vision?
What is your vision?
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, our vision is clear. We believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.